This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And welcome into the season finale of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. A little post-mortem of the Bruins season this morning, and we can take your thoughts on what happened in the series against Tampa, the season as a whole, and looking forward, obviously, to the offseason. We'll do a lot of all three this morning. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number. It's Ryan Johnston, joined in studio by Bob Beers. We will talk with Judd Surratt coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. Joe Haggerty and Billy Jaffe will join us along the way as well. But good morning, Beersy.
Morning, Ryan.
Wish it were under better circumstances,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing, and you kind of look at it when it happens, and, you know, everyone's pissed off, but it's you know, when you look at the big picture, I think there's a lot of good things to take from it, and you know, that's, I mean,
it's,
you
tough.
Move forward with some pretty good pieces in place right now, and you're probably ahead of where you were last year, but now you're going to set yourself up for some more expectations next year, which is
sure,
you know, which is to be expected. I mean, that's next year now, expectations are up.
It's often tough to do in the moment, or you know, shortly after the moment, to kind of feel that way. But when you take a step back over the course of this offseason and look at the direction of this organization and where they're headed, and the development of some of the young guys this year, and the fact that they were able to to accomplish what they did this year, It makes you feel good. This organization is headed in a real positive direction right now.
Yeah, I mean, you see some teams that make it maybe to the second round or even a little bit further, and all of a sudden, but they're not set up for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had teams that, you know, look at Carolina, who makes, you know, they make the playoffs or even win the cup, but they're not set up for that long haul when they or Edmonton the year that. They went to the finals, and all of a sudden,
and you're
they
right
don't
back
make the
down
playoffs
to the bottom
for the next 10 years. So I think that when you see this team right now, and it's not going to be easy because the teams around them, I mean, Tampa Bay is set up for some pretty good things. Toronto, certainly, you know, with their young players, they've got some work to do, but with their young players, that's an exciting team right now to keep an eye on, and they're all in the same division. And, you know, the rest of the teams in the division, you know, not 100% sure which direction they're going. Florida seems to be on the uptake. Ottawa, Montreal, not sure. Detroit, not sure. Who am I missing?
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Well, Buffalo's got the first pick overall this year, but still a ways to go. So, you know, this the top of the division right now is very strong. You know, the rest of the division, not quite as much. Maybe Florida makes that jump next year. But those top three teams look like they're in it here for a little while.
All right, so as we sit here almost a week removed from the end of the series against Tampa, what were your takeaways from that series? I mean, there were obviously, and we talked about it last week, there was, you know, there were some things that in that series could have flipped it, or at least a game or two potentially the other way. But overall, you know, Toronto, I don't think too many people would argue, was the better team Tampa was the better team for the balance of that series.
Yes, I would agree with that. And they shut the Bruins down. I mean, just look at, I mean, you don't even have to look at numbers. I mean, just look at the eye test. I mean, the Bruins had trouble moving the puck up the ice a lot during that series. They had trouble moving, whether it was out of their own zone or up the ice. There were a lot of turnovers. Yes, Tampa's going to have a lot to do with that. But there are other times where, you know, there's plays to be made, and you know, even not under pressure, and those plays weren't being made cleanly enough for their liking, for my liking. But five-on-five play, which was a strength of the Bruins all season long, the depth of their team and the ability to score five-on-five and to wear teams down shift after shift, that wasn't there enough for them. I mean, you know, the numbers bear that out, the five-on-five play. You know, special teams where the power play was good, Tampa's power play was good, so that kind of washed each other out. But you know, once you got past the top line, there really was virtually no scoring other than, you know, Rick Nash had a pair of goals in the first game, in game one against Tampa. So, you know, that was a big, big hole for Boston. You know, I don't think people realize the hole maybe Brandon Carlo put them in, you know, with his injury, you know, him being out. He's a guy that can really move the puck. He can get back there. Adam McQuaid's a different player, and Adam McQuaid blocked shots over on that right side. You know, he got in the face of Stamkos for some of those one-timers. You know, he was valuable in that way. But on a shift for shift, I mean, that, you know, a guy like Brandon Carlo can get back and move the puck. I know he had his difficulties this year. I get that, but. You know, was he starting to turn the corner prior to his injury? Maybe. You know, a lot of people thought so, me included. So that was a big loss because he can move. He can, you know, he's got good feet. He's got a good stick. He can move that puck up the ice. He can get there, you know, when the puck is dumped in. So there's a lot of issues, I think, that with the Bruins right now that are fixable. But at the same time, there's still going to be a lot of questions moving forward as to, all right, you know, what's our lineup going to look like next year? Who are we going to re-sign in unrestricted free agency? Who are we going after? Are we going after anybody in unrestricted free agency? Are we signing any of our own unrestricted free agents? And these are the questions that I'm sure we'll sure. talk about here today.
Do you feel like this team isn't as deep as we thought they were coming out of that series? I mean, you talk about the lack of secondary scoring. We talked about that a lot on the show last week, that they needed to find a way to do that. Or did they just run into a team that's a lot deeper than they are?
Well, from the secondary scoring standpoint, I think that they ran into a team that was just a lot deeper than they were. I mean, there were some guys that were underperforming up front that needed to be a little bit better, whether it was injury related or not. They needed to be a little bit better. I think more so was defensively for the Bruins. And I'll go back to it because we talked about it last year. We talked about it partly the year before. It's still there. Who's spotting in? Who's playing on the left side 20 to 25 minutes?
Right.
And Torrey Krug had a fantastic season offensively. He had a fantastic postseason offensively. You know, defensively, you're a really good team if he's the third pairing, third D.
Right.
So,
but he's not.
There's a big hole right there.
He's the second.
There's a big hole right there. It is. I mean, and that's when you really take the next step and you're ready. And Chara's now 41. So where is that coming from? And that's priority number one for me in the offseason. Where is that coming from? And if it's not from within, then they've got to go out and make that trade. They can get by. They can, you know, they can make their way through the season and things. But if they want to take the next step in the playoffs, I think that has to be addressed.
Well, and that to me is, as you said, it's the number one priority for you. It's the number one priority for me, too.
You can get by secondary scoring-wise and
no
things
question.
Like that against a lot of teams during the season because you'll wear teams down and you're good enough up there. But when you get against the elite, when you get against a Tampa Bay, or even Toronto for that matter, but you know, you had two teams over 100, well over 100 points, and Tampa ended up with more than you. When you get against that team, game after game after game, every other night, you know, that area gets exposed.
Well, there's, I just, you know, going forward, you know, can you go to the playoffs next year with a 42-year-old Zdeno Chara expected to play, you know, 26, 27 minutes
a
night?
Well, he won't. He didn't play that much in the regular season, but, the, you know, and they tried to conserve.
Sure, but when you get to the playoffs, you know,
exactly.
those minutes go up. I mean, you need him.
We've been calling for it for a year and a half. They know it. I mean, it's not a secret. They know it. They realize it. And where's that going to come from? And that's going to be their, you know, challenge here moving forward. And if they have to go out and make that trade because they've got a lot of players or prospects, you know, people that are in the system or draft picks, things like that. And if they have to go out and make that deal, then that's something. I think that is their main priority right now.
All right, we'll get to as many of your calls this morning as we can. 617-779-0985 is, of course, the number. And Maria in Watertown is up first, bright and early. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Good.
I'm a little sad we're not going to be talking about hockey well into May and June. But having said that, first thing I want to do is thank you, Ryan and Bob and Judd and everybody who comes in to provide us with what I think is the best hockey talk in Boston by far. So thank you very much for all of that and for always being so gracious and kind. With regard to the Bruins, my expectations were not only met this season, but I think they exceeded them a little bit. My hope was that this group of veterans and young team could at least get into one round of the playoffs, win a round, get those kids some experience, and then build on that for the future. Having said that, I do think Tampa did a good job of exposing our weaknesses, and one of which is on the back end with the pairing of Torrey Krug and Kevin Miller together was not very good, guys. And I think some of that is due to the fact that we were missing Brandon Carlo, and I would like to see that addressed at some point this season. But kudos to Don Sweeney and Bruce Cassidy for a very successful season all in all. And again, thank you and have a wonderful summer, guys.
I appreciate it, Maria, and thank you for the kind words.
Well, so let's take it through on the left side. You got Chara, and then you've got Krug, and then you've got Grizzlick. Matt Grizzlick proved that he can be an everyday NHL player. He played well this year. So you've got a couple of guys there in Krug and Grizzlick, and Krug is further ahead on the learning curve right now, or at least on his career. He's better offensively right now. Grizzlick can do some things, with his quickness, with his ability to escape, with his ability to make plays under pressure. You know, he showed that this year, and he learned a little bit more how to defend by using his stick and maybe his body position instead of trying, because you're not going to be able to overpower guys with his size. It's just a fact. A lot of guys, not everybody, obviously, but you got to use your feet to defend and your stick position, your body position, and that's something that he continued to get better at. Can he be the guy that gets you 40 to 50 points? I don't know yet. I'm not sure yet. The more confidence at the offensive blue line, that type of thing, maybe that comes. But the fact is, though, he proved that he can play. The problem is you've got Krug and Grizzlick right there, but I don't think either one of them, at least at this point, is the 20 to 25 minute really
right.
And I mean, Torrey Krug competes. He plays extremely hard. He had a great season offensively and defensively at times as well. I mean, you don't have a good defensive team and make it to where you were without certain components. And he did that. I just think that when you get against this, when you get into this area, the playoffs, and it's going to be against a good team, that's where the Bruins needed a bit of an upgrade.
Yeah, and so, look, you played against one of, if not the best offensive team in the league.
That's a dilemma that next year. Let's say you add that player that's going to be that's going to be that guy, a 26-year-old guy who's going to play 20 to 25 minutes and be your next guy, 27-year-old. A Ryan McDonough.
Right.
Okay, let's say you add that in the offseason. Probably not going to happen. I'm just saying, throwing his name out there for an example.
Something in that vein, yeah.
So, okay, Chara McDonough, 1-1A, over on the left side. Then you got Krug and Grizzlick. And, is that... is Grizzlick sitting out? Do you make a trade? These are questions that they have to answer here in the offseason. Or is it coming from within? Some of the guys down in Providence, I don't think they're ready yet. I don't think they're ready for that role.
Well, that's the thing is, they might be ready to pressure for a job in the league, but it's going to be as a third pairing guy to start.
Well,
right?
And if that's the case, then you have trade possibilities. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You have trade possibilities on your current roster or on the Providence guys that played in Providence this year. So,
well, and as we talk about it and we go through, I mean, there are some places where there's going to be a competition for jobs come training camp if all of these guys are still around, and you've got some decisions to make going forward as to maybe some of these guys are expendable in order to get what you need to get.
Second area, I don't want to get too far ahead, but who's playing right wing behind Pastrnak?
That's
in a scoring role.
Yep. We're going to get to that coming up as well. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show season finale.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Wrapping up the Bruins season at 617-779-0985. We're going to get to more of your calls here in just a moment. One of the things, Bob, that comes out after the season, you know, they in the kind of exit press conferences and all of that, you get a list of all the injuries, and it's always a laundry list of guys who are dealing with significant injuries that, you know, some we knew about, some, you know, but maybe didn't know the extent of, some that we you know, maybe don't even have a clue about sometimes, and that's always head-shaking. But the one of the things that I was struck by, and I think a lot of people were struck by this week, is as, you know, all of that was going on, was some of the comments made by Brad Marchand, who drew the attention of the NHL and media everywhere with the licking incidents. We talked about it at length last week. But he was pretty contrite about that, some of that stuff, and said, you know, he needs to take a long, hard look in the mirror this offseason and kind of decide what kind of player he wants to be. We've heard some things like that before in the past when he's dealt with suspensions for some of the things that he has done. Do you believe that, number one, the organization maybe has gotten a little tired of some of the antics, and number two, do you believe he's really thinking about being a different type of a player going forward?
I think that the organization has a level of respect around the league for the way that they do business. I think that you know, they want to carry that level of respect to be a team that is going to compete hard every night. They run the right way. I think this is what they're striving towards. Mm-hmm. They employ good people. You know, you can be a superstar player and still be good people. And Brad Marchand's a good person. Let's not get past that. Like, you know, he's a good person. Anybody that knows him personally and knows the things that he does off the ice, he is a good person. Does he get carried away on the ice? Absolutely. Do they want it to stop? Definitely. And that's kind of where they're at right now. You know, play on the line, that's not easy for him. We've talked about that for how many years now? It's not easy for him not to cross the line, because you got to play on that line. And, you know, if you start chirping a guy, or you go low on a guy, like, you know, with Callahan, and I didn't think it was a penalty worthy, but that's going to get my attention. That's going to get Ryan Callahan's attention if you kind of go a little bit lower on him. You know, Ryan Callahan comes back and gets in his face. Absolutely. You have to expect that. So he doesn't want to punch back, all right, because you don't want to take a penalty, and like that's his defense mechanism, right? I mean, so but you know, there's different. I can't put myself in his head. I don't know, but I know that the organization wants it to stop, and I think Brad Marchand, you know, just listening to his comments, wants it to stop as well, and realizes that it needs to stop. I mean, you know, you're playing right next to a guy night in and night out. World Cup, you've been next to him for years, and that's Patrice Bergeron, who's probably the classiest.
He's like the epitome of what an NHL player should be,
right? Jean Rattel, right? Yeah. I mean, he's exactly. And I don't think he's a guy that speaks up, but there was a video there of Chara going over and talking to him. Yeah, I don't think it affects their play at all. I just think
I don't think that either. That it's some massive distraction.
It's just a huge distraction. Yeah. It's only a distraction because people ask them about it after the fact, and people for the next 3 days, 4 days are asking them about it. You know, when the whole story is Boston and Tampa and how to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, the only questions the media wants to ask—I shouldn't say the only ones, but you know, a lot of the questions the media wants to ask is well, what about Brad Marchand? So, in that sense, yeah, you know. So yeah, the organization wants some stuff. I think that they have a level of respect that they want to keep around the league, and that they want to attain around the league. And if you're going to employ, you know, people, you need them to be. He doesn't have to be a perfect city, like on the ice. He doesn't have to be perfect. You want a little belligerence out there.
Sure.
I don't mind that at all. And you want him to be like that. You want him to play his game. That's taking it too far. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. It's taking it too far.
Billy Jaffe and I talked about it in our podcast earlier this week about the idea that, you know, Brad Marchand has developed. At one point, he was, you know,
he's elite.
He's a third, fourth line guy who's kind
all-star.
Of a rat and an agitator. He's now an elite player who's more around the league, is becoming more known for this type of stuff than he is for his play. And I think, you know, at some point you have to decide, okay, like, what do you want to be known for? What do you know when?
Well,
when,
I think when Don Sweeney said something like that.
When your career's over, like, what do you want to be remembered for? Do you want to be remembered for licking Ryan Callahan or for being one of the elite offensive players in the league and really one of the elite two-way players in the league?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, well, some people are always going to remember him for that. No matter, I mean, they're always going to hate him. I mean, Pat Verbeek was, you know, a guy that, you know, you hated to play against, and he was the original, little ball of hate. He always had penalty minutes, but he could score, and he played hard every night. And I remember him like that, you know. And,
sure.
But that's the way I'll remember Brad Marchand a long time from now when he's done, as an elite player, a guy that could just do so many good things for you on the ice. He's developed into one of the best goal scorers in the league. He just, like I said, hard to put myself in his shoes. Have never been there. From the outside looking in, you know, please stop. Take it to a certain point, but just don't go over that point. And like I said, that's easier said than done sometimes. When you're in the heat of the moment and the intensity is just boiling over and you got guys chirping back at you and you're chirping at them and things are going on out there and it happens and it just, there's a snap. And, you know, there's other ways to snap, I guess. But, you know, I don't think there's any question. The speeches made at the end of the year by whether it was Don Sweeney or Bruce Cassidy, and the apology made by Brad Marchand, I think all of it's sincere from both sides, and they want to move forward without that kind of hanging over their heads.
Whether they, you know, it's easier said than done, though, in Marchand's
case. Actions will
dictate. Right. So we'll see. Ryan, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Okay, so two things. One, how do you think Tuukka played against Tampa?
He was good. He was for the most part, he was good.
I thought he was very good.
I thought he played lights out. But how come when he's facing a high-caliber team, he plays lights out? Don't get me wrong, Toronto is a very skilled firepower team, but they don't have as much talent firepower as Tampa has.
Well, Tampa was, may have been the highest scoring team in the league this year.
I think they were, yeah.
Toronto wasn't far behind.
Right.
Toronto's pretty high powered. So he wasn't as good against Toronto. He was very good against Tampa. I don't have an answer for that. I'm not sure why. You know, maybe Toronto's just a tougher matchup just in the looks that they gave him. Maybe, you know, the team defense at certain points weren't as good as they needed to be. Maybe he just wasn't. He made some good saves in at times in that series against Toronto. There were a couple times, you know, there are a couple games you look at and he was very good. And then there were other games that were like, you know, especially even early in Game 7 where you didn't know which goalie was going to allow more at that time.
Toronto was tied for second in the league.
In goals.
You played two of the three highest scoring teams
exactly.
in the league in the playoffs.
And that can't be overlooked. Yeah. I mean, you were short
one of your top six D going into the playoffs.
Yeah,
too.
And your D got exposed a bit at times. At the same time, you know, you did a great job in shutting down Austin Matthews. You know, and you did a great job in shutting down, for the most part, Kucherov and Stamkos. They started to pick through at the end there. Those aren't easy guys to shut down. It was the next level that kind of did a lot of the damage for both those teams.
No, but I think, you know, we both believe, like,
Mitch Marner was fantastic in the Toronto series.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely questions in the Toronto series, but, you know, in the Tampa series, it's tough to find fault with Tuukka.
No,
in that series at all.
Not at all. I mean, I know that there's one goal that people look back on, that Tyler Johnson goal, and you know, but you're looking at one goal through a series. I mean,
one goal in five games, you take that in a second. All right, Sean Silver's going to give us Sports Hub headlines. We'll continue with your calls throughout today at 617-779-0985. Joe Haggerty is going to join us coming up next as well on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports
Sports Hub Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers. Judd Serrat will check in with us after 10 o'clock. He headed home to be with the family to start the offseason this week. So he'll be joining us remotely coming up after 10 o'clock. We'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up after 10:30 this morning as well.
No more bosom buddies with Billy Jaffe?
No, it's Billy had to put out the for rent sign. So if you're looking to rent a room somewhere in the area, give Billy a call, at least for the summer. Joe Haggerty is with us from NBC Sports Boston, of course. And, well, off season has begun. We were just talking a little bit about some of the discussion after the Tampa series ended and Brad Marchand and his contrition the other day. What was your take on what Marshy had to say about his, you know, cleaning up his act, I guess?
I mean, every time he does it, he sounds genuine. He sounds like he means it. He said it before, though. It, maybe not as heartfelt as this time, it seemed like, but I think he said similar things in end-of-season breakup day kind of press conferences before.
Do you think this is different because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a... you know, a low bridge hit. It wasn't a, you know, a, kind of an in the heat of the battle type of a thing. It was more of a kind of a goof off, you know, type of thing. It feels like the organization looks at this one differently maybe than it would had it been another one of his hits or something along those lines.
Yeah, and I think because of that and because of the nature of it and, you know, the other stuff sort of happens in a game. You get suspended, whatever. This is sort of way outside the bounds of like what you usually see. And, you know, there is an embarrassment factor there. So I think there's definitely a different discussion, certainly a different reaction on his part. I mean, I still think he's probably going to try to find other ways to walk that line where, you know, he's either defending himself or agitating players while not, you know, going to that level. I mean, he's still trying to find that balance where he can do things and not get penalized. In an ideal world, he would realize he's an elite player, realize, you know, he's one of the best players in the league, on the best line in the league, and a lot of that stuff he just doesn't have to do anymore. But he still has players coming after him all over the place. You know, he's still a target, everybody else trying to get a rise out of him and try to get him to do stupid things. So, you know, he's going to be tested all the time. And you know, really, the biggest thing I think of, aside from the organizational end of it, of like, look, Brad, cut the crap. Like, you know, this shouldn't represent us. We don't like this. It's also costing him. It's costing him calls. It's costing him not getting a breakaway call in the third period of a one-goal game.
Is costing the team.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you're seeing it happen again and again and again. My question is that, even if he cleans it up, right, and even if he becomes a good citizen, doesn't do any of that stuff anymore, how long does it take for the perception to change?
Right. Is it fixable?
How long does it take the referees to change after he's been in the league for 8 years now, and there's already really a set level of behavior for him, and he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt ever? You know, is that ever going to change? Are the refs ever going to sort of view him differently, and is the perception going to change for him? I think that's really the big question going forward, but... you know, I hope he changes because I think he's a good enough player where he doesn't have to do a lot of that stuff. Certainly, I still want to see his personality. Certainly, I think, you know, NHL is best served by having, you know, heroes and villains out there as far as a compelling entertainment piece. And I think you need players like Brad Marchand, but he needs to find a way to do it without, you know, licking a guy's face like it's an ice cream cone. I think that's something that nobody needs to see anymore.
As you look back at the season... we were talking earlier about, you know, the expectations going into this season, and the Bruins definitely surpassed those, I think, in most people's eyes. Just, you know, without knowing, obviously, some of the moves that are going to be made this offseason, how do you look at next season for this team, and what kind of expectations do you think they're going to have?
Well, I think it's raised, obviously. You'd like to see them take the next step. It's really hard, though, to get right from where they are now that... you know, get to the second round to being a team that can get through the 2 month grind of getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, I think that last step is one of the most difficult ones. But you know, I think there should be very big expectations for the team based on what we saw this past season, based on the fact that there was a lot of players that was their first playoff experience, first or second playoff experience this particular year, first time some of them had won a round. So. and played in a game seven. So I fully expect they're going to make a move or two to address some of the roster sort of weaknesses or needs that they have. And I'd put them in the Stanley Cup conversation with any other team at this point. You know, they'd, based on the regular season that they had, why not? They got the best line in hockey. They've got one of the best young up-and-coming defensemen. Zdeno Chara is still going at 42. They certainly are going to need more secondary scoring, but they have the talent and the youth and everything to be a contender.
Let's bring in Frank the Tank. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Morning, Frank.
Morning, guys. It's all year long. Going to miss the show for the next few months, but we'll all survive. Look, if I could work backwards here, look, starting with the playoffs, I think the Bruins got hosed a little bit on some calls. I mean, there's no question about that, but they did lose to the better team, and, you know, I'm fine with that. I just would have liked to have seen the series rightfully be extended to the 6 or 7 games that it really should have gone to. As far as, like, the regular season goes, guys, you know, I look back on it, and, I mean, we've got a lot to look forward to here. A lot of young guys, a lot of speed. They seemed to play with a lot of chemistry with one another. I thought they battled hard through the season. I thought they stood up for one another. You know, you had some guys emerge, and, you know, it should be a very interesting offseason. I do think that you've got to get rid of Torey Krug. I think that should be a priority. I think you've got some defensemen coming up in the pipeline. I think Grizzlick can take his spot. As far as, you know, some of the young forwards go, I think it's time with the surplus that there is there. I think Sweeney does have to take a look at this team and say to himself, I've got some surplus. I need to get a little bit bigger and a little bit more scoring touch on a wing, especially on that second line. And I wouldn't be against, shopping David Krejci around. So, you know, we've got some stuff to look forward to, guys. It was disappointing how it ended, but all in all, I mean, you got to tip your hat to the kids. It was a good season.
I appreciate the call, Frank.
I don't think it's getting rid of Torey Krug. I think it's that Torey Krug has value around the league, and if they wanted to go that route, you know, they could potentially move him and get something back. My thing is, you look on the left side, right? Zdeno Chara is going to be 42 next year. We've now seen Torey Krug get hurt late in the season 2 years in a row, and you still have some questions durability-wise, once the pounding really gets hard in the postseason. So
doesn't take an injury, though.
What's that?
It doesn't take the injury. You still need to upgrade on the left side, exactly. Right? Regardless of whether he's injured or
that
not.
That was my point,
for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, this is what we've been talking about for the last 2 years is, you know, we need a left side defenseman. They need to go out and do it, and you need a frontline guy that can do everything, and it's been a need for a while, and maybe Torey Krug is a means to an end to getting that, whether it's...
But you also have to look at, you know, look, if you take Torey Krug off of this team, you're hurting your power play, right? I mean, that's you're taking... Because you don't have... You know, we were talking earlier about Matt Grizzlick, and look, he's got some upside there,
but I don't think he's got the offense. No.
But he's not the same type, you know, the same player right now, so... No. You're going to be regressing in one area as you're trying to improve in another area. I mean, that's you might be kind of,
but you also
know,
have Charlie
sideways there.
Charlie McAvoy, sure. Who is continuing to emerge as an offensive defenseman. You put him as the one defenseman point on that power play, and you still have all the other talent on that first unit. As he continues to emerge and come into his own offensively, do you really miss Krug that much? I don't know that you do. I mean, certainly you're not going to expect Matt Grizzlick to step into every area of what Torey Krug does. But I think the point is you have different young guys that are going to be able to step in and fill in, you know, some of the things that you might miss with a player like Krug. But, you know, at some point they need to get that, you know, top four left shot guy that can play 20 plus minutes, that can play in all situations based on everything else that they have. And the other big need, obviously, as Frank the Tank mentioned, was, you know, the big winger for Krejci, a Rick Nash, but a Rick Nash that will be able to perform the way expect him to, rather than a guy that I thought was fairly disappointing. So,
well, don't sleep on the third line center either, because I mean, if Riley Nash isn't back and he's an unrestricted free agent, if he wants a lot of money and if he's not back, I don't want to get ahead of myself because this is all stuff that's going to be answered over the next few weeks to a month or so, but if he's not back, then that is a big spot right there.
But hold that thought, Hacks, because I do want to talk about Riley Nash with you. Yep. So we're going to get to that coming up next. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show season finale.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, along with Bob Beers and Joe Haggerty, is here as well. All right, so I held you up on Riley Nash so we could get the break in there. But Riley Nash, as Bob mentioned, unrestricted free agent, your third line center, going into the offseason. He was only making $900,000 this year, had a terrific year, and with... You know, when Patrice Bergeron was out, he was able to fill in on the top line, and Marchand and Pasternak didn't skip a beat with him at the center. So he was an important role player on this team. Is there any way they're going to get him to stick around, considering, you know, he's going to see a decent bump in salary this offseason?
I suppose there's a chance. I don't think they're going to be able to keep him just because... he picked a good year to have a career high in all his offensive categories.
Yep.
I think he's probably going to at least triple or quadruple what he's making. And, you know, that might start to become too much for the Bruins to spend on the third line center. I think there are unique circumstances because he fills in so well for Bergeron if and when Bergeron gets hurt. And the fact that he can already do it, I think, adds some value to the Bruins more than to any other team around the league, potentially retaining him. But, you know, I guess my thing is the third line center more so than the left shot D and, you know, the power forward right winger for the second line that's going to be a legit offensive threat, so you're not quite so top heavy with the offense the next time around. I think that's more easily replaced or filled in-house than those other two positions. Trent Frederick, JFK, who I know had his injury issues this year, but at least... you've got decent internal candidates, and you maybe have somebody that steps up and is able to be that young player that can fill in as the third line center. And really, that's what it's all about, and that's what it's supposed to be in the salary cap world is, you know, a veteran goes out, has a great season, becomes a free agent, ups his value. You can't re-sign them. You restock and refill with your young players, and you kind of cycle through with those guys, especially, you know, the bottom pairing defensemen and the bottom, you know, two lines on your forward group. So, you know, I would think third line center wise, at least they've got candidates, young guys that can fill in. Those other two spots, you have to go outside the organization because they don't have players that are going to be able to step up and be those guys.
Yeah, I think you're underestimating how important that role is.
No, I think it's important.
And you say you got young guys that can fill in there. I don't know if that's the case right now. I don't think it's the case right now. Of course, Bakke Carlson had those injuries. You know, he had a good start to the season. Can he get back from the injuries that he had at the end of the year and be that guy? I mean, that's an important role on your team. We see the depth, and we see how the third line isn't a checking line anymore. The third line is a scoring line. The third line is a line that can be, you can move them around. They're kind of moving parts, if you will. You can move them up. You can move them down your lineup. You can play them on the power play. You can play them in the penalty kill situations. Those guys can be played in different areas. You know, they have to have multiple uses. And to just say that, you know, oh, they can be, you know, easily replaced. I didn't say easily.
Well, I said they have in-house candidates as a third-line center, whereas those other two things, they do not have any in-house candidates.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they have them in-house yet. I mean, I think Trent Frederick is a terrific prospect, and so is Forsbacka Carlson, for that matter. Jack Studnicka is on his way up. But these guys, you know, are they ready for that role? That's a very important role. So we
saw in the playoffs how important that role is because clearly Riley Nash was not up to his usual form, and it hurt them in the postseason. And the fact that he could fill in for Bergeron, I think, is a huge thing. You know, I don't underestimate that because I think there are times.
And he wasn't great at it early in the season, but he was much better at it later in the season.
Yep. I mean, he's a good player, but I think he's going to get money on the market that I think the Bruins are going to be hard pressed to match.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, and that's my point is that, okay, who's going to step in there?
Yep.
Do they have it in house, or do they have to go out of the organization like they did before with Riley Nash? and bring in the new Riley Nash.
Right, like an undervalued guy that they can sign for
a year
not
or two
much money.
For his money, you know, to keep the seat warm until somebody's ready to step
yeah.
in.
Yeah, and you
or
hope
are those guys ready to step in? I don't know the answer to that.
Yep.
You know, that's that, and their play will dictate that.
But at least you have options there. Like yeah. you know, the other things that you just don't have, and you're going to need to pay a premium to get them, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, left side D and right winger.
Yeah.
I mean, just from the dollars and cents perspective, you know, I mean, you got David Backus making $6 million on the third line right wing. Can you afford a $3 million third line center on this team with the structure that you've got? Especially if you're going to have to add a top four defenseman, like whoever that person is, well, generally is not going to be very cheap.
And you've got Carlo and McAvoy coming up after next season. And I mean, yeah, yep. The way it is, you're not going to be able to spend that kind of money on the third line. Maybe, you know, you'll either have to do one of two things, as Beersy said. Either it's the young guys or you find another bargain like a Riley Nash and hope he works out just as well. I just don't know if you're going to be able to get lightning to strike twice on that one, you know. But at least if you have a veteran and young guys going into camp, let them battle it out and see how it goes.
One last thing before you go. Khudobin. Sounds like he's interested in staying.
Sounds like Boston is his favorite city ever. I would expect that they're going to try to get him back, and he wants to be back. And you're going to need a goalie that can play a lot and play well to give Tuukka Rask the rest
so
of the
So how
needs.
Many years, how much?
I mean, I'd give him a couple of years.
So do you get the first year Anton Khudobin, or you get the second year Anton Khudobin?
The question, right? Well,
if you give him a couple of years.
The second half of the first year was pretty good once the coaching change happened, right?
Yeah,
he won some big games down the stretch.
Down the stretch, he absolutely won some big games down the stretch, but it took him two-thirds of the year.
I don't know that he's going to get 2 years anywhere else, so you might even be able to get him, just offer him a year to keep him because he likes it here. And you know, I don't know that you necessarily have to offer him multi-years.
Last year, a season ago, he was in Providence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had to spend some time in Providence.
Yep.
He cleared waivers, and he made it down to Providence because he wasn't doing the job up here. And he had a couple of little injuries. I realized that. But that was his first year of a two-year deal.
He did win some big games down the stretch. As soon as the coaching change happened, he was better. I thought he was much better. And he's talked a lot about, you know, the confidence in him and, like, kind of vaguely referencing that he didn't think Claude had confidence in him. So I'm with you, though. I understand what you're saying. I think you can get away with offering him year to year at this point. At 32 years old, as a guy that, you know, has had his chances in the past and was never able to grab hold of them, I don't know that anybody's going to be
he
up there.
He was great this year. He was very good towards the end of the first year. I mean, I get all that. He was very, very good. You need his head in the right place.
Yeah.
You need him to be in shape like he was this year. You need him to be in top shape like he was this year and be motivated.
Yep.
And if it's a 2 or 3 year deal, or if it's, whatever it is, 1, 2, 3 year deal, he needs to be motivated to be that same guy that he was this year. Everything worked out perfectly in terms of, you know, you had a plan for how many games Rask would play.
Yep.
You had to have a good backup goaltender to step in there and play on a schedule. And then also the ability to step in and play 4 games in a row in November when Rask yep. wasn't doing the job and the team wasn't playing well. You've got all that this year. You had no injuries with the two of them to speak of. That's a big ask moving forward. I mean, that's everything came together in that regard this year in their plan and the way that they wanted it. Does it all come together next year?
I agree, but like at least he's done it. You know, other options out there, there aren't many attractive ones. Certainly in-house, I don't think
Zane... Just saying, it's worth a look.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think Zane McIntyre is ready for anything like that, and I don't know that the other options out there free agent-wise for goalies... I mean, Carter Hutton's a good goalie, but I think that's a guy that is going to get a lot of money based on the season that he had and probably going to get a shot at a starting job. So I don't know that you're going to find a better backup option just off the scrap heap out there.
All right, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate you stopping in.
Thank you.
Having good off-season.
Enjoy the off-season.
All right, we will continue with another hour. Judd Surratt will join us coming up, and Billy Jaffe in the final half hour as well. And your call, 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right hand, Sam. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Final hour here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Final hour of the day, final hour of the season. As we wrap up the Bruins campaign and look forward to the offseason, Ryan Johnston, along with Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And we'll head out to the phones now and bring in the other half of the Bruins broadcast crew as we welcome in Judd Surratt, who made a hasty retreat back home to see the family instead of being in studio with us this weekend. I mean, come on, Judd. You know, you couldn't stick around for a few extra days?
Oh, I wanted to see that fifth grade band concert. My daughter was playing it. She was terrific, so I had to hustle home for that.
They ready to get rid of you yet?
Who is this stranger, and why is he doing in our home?
It's getting there. You know, I think because I stayed up late to watch a little bit of hockey last night, I probably had to sleep somewhere else.
Didn't take long. All right, so as we kind of have been putting a wrap on the season here and looking toward the off season, you know, just your main takeaways from this season and you know, where this team developed as, you know, we look back at where they were in September and October versus where they are in May and how much better we should feel about the direction of this organization and the development of, especially of some of these young players.
Well, there's a lot there. I think for the most part, I'll go back to the way Beersy and I sort of ended the broadcast in Tampa. I think if you look back at what the Bruins did this season, they exceeded their expectations in challenging for the Eastern Conference title during the regular season. My takeaway is how good those young players were for the Boston Bruins during the course of the year. Yes, your core flourished, and they had a fabulous season, and that's a great sign for the Bruins. But it was the way that you were able to handle that influx of young players, how productive they were, because you're going to see a lot more of that, I think, for the upcoming season.
Some of those players individually, guys like Jake DeBrusque and Danton Heinen and Ryan Donato, who comes on at the end of the season, and those types of players, what role do you envision for those guys come the start of camp next year?
Well, I think for a guy like Jake DeBrusque, assuming that David Krejci is back, and I have no reason to believe that he won't be for next season, you found a guy that fits with a guy in David Krejci. Who's going to play along the right side? I think that that still has to be determined once training camp starts and once the season starts to unfold. I think for a guy like Danton Heinen, he had a breakout campaign. This is a guy who had a taste the season before, was up and down, but was a far better player this year, the way he was able to compete for pucks. And I think in the bigger picture, he earned the trust of the coaching staff. And I think that that's significant, especially for the way that Bruce Cassidy likes to coach and the way that he likes to play. Because for players that coaches do not trust, they have a hard time getting off the bench on a consistent basis. For a guy like Ryan Donato, it'll be interesting to see where he starts, what position he starts in, whether he starts in the National Hockey League or in the American Hockey League. I don't think that's beyond, you know, I don't think that is necessarily off the table for a guy like him, depending on how you forecast how you want to use him. You want to use him on the wing. You want to use him at center. But I think the other thing that's important to remember for a guy like Ryan Donato and for a lot of guys who played college hockey, it's a completely different lifestyle. You're playing double the games. It's going to take some time. And I think, you know, anytime that you're building with youth, I think you have to remember that, A, development is not linear. It's not like you constantly get better. There are going to be some ups and downs. It doesn't matter how talented those players are. But I think for a lot of guys who come out of college hockey in particular, and to a lesser extent junior, I think they have to get used to the pro schedule and used to the pro style as well.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We look at Donato especially. During the postseason, a lot of people obviously were calling for him to get into the lineup throughout, you know, throughout the playoffs, and he did at the beginning, and then he did again at the end. But you know, people, it seemed like, were anticipating he was going to come in and, you know, and have this massive impact. It doesn't always work that way for a young guy. You know, he's got talent, we know that, but you know, to hear Bruce Cassidy talk about how, like, you know, we're really kind of only comfortable with him playing the left wing right now. And as you said, you know, where do they see him going forward? Is it, you know, do they want to try and develop him more as a center? Are they comfortable, you know, next year with him playing an off wing? It's, you know, as you said, if DeBrusque is the guy to go next to Krejci, That doesn't leave a lot of room for a guy like Ryan Donato and the type of game that he's got, as talented as he is.
It might, but, I mean, you know, you don't forget about Anders Bjork. I mean,
yep.
Don't forget about, you know, Danton Heinen has moved over and played the right side. Is it ideal? That still remains to be seen. I think, in my mind, probably a couple guys could really benefit from going down and spending some time in Providence, just like DeBrusk and Heinen did. I think Donato's got the ability, he's got the potential to be a very good player, a very good player. So does Anders Bjork. You know, I don't think we should sleep on him, Judd. I don't know how you feel about it, but it wouldn't hurt to spend a few months at the beginning of the season. If it shows in camp that you're not ready, don't get me wrong. If you come in and you earn a spot, then you earned a spot.
Sure.
But it's not the worst thing. In fact, it's beneficial in a big way for some of these guys. Unless they are absolutely positively ready to step in and do the things you need to on an everyday basis to be ready in the NHL, it's not a bad thing to go down to Providence, and it's more beneficial than people give it credit for.
Well, I think for a guy like Anders Bjork, Beersy, I'm with you on that one. I think Bjork has a chance to be an impact player. With his hands.
And he played a lot of his off wing.
Speed. I don't know. You know, that'll have to be something I think we have to watch a little bit more. His ability to play on that off wing and how effective he can be along the wall, whether it's in his own end or at the offensive end. But for a guy like Ryan Donato, I think we talk about this in the bigger picture. The hardest thing, I think, for general managers and organizations is to be patient. But if you have a belief that a guy like Ryan Donato can be a supreme impact player, then take the time to get it right. You have to balance that with the fact, however, that you got to be able to make the playoffs. How do you be able to do that? You know, and just getting into the playoffs is a feat unto itself. Now, once you're in, I think you got a shot. But especially looking at the Atlantic Division, and we kind of detailed this at the tail end of the broadcast in Tampa Bay, just how good it is with Tampa and Toronto. You had a young team in Florida that I think will have a far different season next year, that just getting into the playoffs is a feat. But I think if the Bruins get in, I don't see any reason, like they did this year, of vying for the Eastern Conference title and coming out and representing the Eastern Stanley Cup final.
It is worth noting, too, Donato, when he signed this year, he could not go to Providence, and that was part of his leverage that he had to sign coming out of college. And if he was going to sign with the Bruins at the end of the season, after his season ended at Harvard, that he could not be sent to Providence. That was his leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case moving forward and he proves he belongs here, then absolutely, because he's got a lot of skill. He's got a lot of ability, and it seems like there's something really there that, you know, he can be a very good player for a long time. If it's not quite there when camp starts, then it's my understanding that they can send him down to Providence and you know, he can spend some time down there. And like I said, go for a few months and learn the pro game.
You've always been a proponent of that. Giving those guys the opportunity to develop
ready.
in that environment.
There are so many good players that develop down there. And Brad Marchand spent significant time down there. I mean, you can go down the list. There's so many guys. I mean, I'm not just looking at Boston.
Most of them did.
Look at Tampa Bay's guys who came in here and played well this postseason. A lot of those forwards, the guys that you never heard of coming in, the Braden Points. I mean, It is a very good, positive, it should be a positive experience in your development.
And for all three of us, because we all spent time in the minors, whether it was calling games or obviously Beers, you spent some time playing in the American Hockey League in the I, trying to develop at the National Hockey League level has its pitfalls. You know, and there are a lot of guys who were talented players who, because they had a hard time developing at the National Hockey League level, never realized their potential or were pigeonholed into particular roles. If you go down to the American League, there's a flexibility that I think a lot of these clubs have that they can put you in a number of situations, whether it's offensively, defensively, on special teams, that allows your game to grow so you are prepared when the big club calls on you.
Right. You got guys in the American League getting power play time that, if it's life and death in the NHL, aren't going to be getting that, or penalty kill time, or right, because they can you know, the wins and losses matter, but not nearly to the level that they do with the big club.
Right, because you have a completely, you know, listen, the direction of the team is, you know, my guess is that the Bruins, their goal will be the same this upcoming season as it was last year. We expect to make the playoffs. If that's your expectation, then you have to play a certain way. You have to coach a certain way.
All right, we'll leave on this. We talked a lot over the course of the first hour about the Bruins' number one need, which, you know, we pretty much, you know, have it nailed as the same number one need that they've had for the last couple of years, which is finding, you know, a top four left shot defenseman. Any thoughts on how they might be able to get that done this offseason?
That's a difficult question. You know, just thinking it, by the way, I don't think that this is necessarily going to happen. But again, I think with the Bruins here, let me circle back. I think in the big picture for the Boston Bruins, you have a lot of assets and a lot of assets that a number of teams probably covet. So if you have a need, you may have to part with some of those assets to get what you need on the back end. You know, just hearing after Nashville got dumped by Winnipeg in the second round, and that was a fabulous series, that apparently there are some rumblings coming out of Nashville that they're thinking about parting with one of their top four defensemen. Well, I tell you what, I love that Matthias Ekholm contract, and I love him as a player, and he can play in any number of situations for you. He would be a guy that would be certainly on my radar. I have no idea what exactly Nashville needs, but it's going to be a challenging offseason for a guy like Don Sweeney. There are a lot of things that went right for the club. He has a lot of assets that are certainly coming through the system and a lot of prospects that should be on their radar. And how he forms the team, you know, clearly, you know, we're talking about very specifics in left shot defense or a right winger to play on that second line or in your top two lines. But I think overall the Bruins need to be faster. They need to be quicker coming out of their own zone. And what those bottom two lines look like heading into next season will be something fascinating to watch when the season starts in October.
That Ekholm contract is pretty. 3.75 for four more years for a 27-year-old left-shot defenseman. Not too bad. Not too bad.
No, he's a great player. Yeah. He can play shutdown defense. And you have to remember that Matthias Ekholm came to the National Hockey League. He was an offensive defenseman who changed his game to generate some more minutes. He's a guy who can munch a ton of minutes for you, play against top-end guys all the time. He would be right at the top of my radar.
I like it. Judd, we appreciate you checking in with us, and enjoy the off-season with the family. We appreciate the time, as always.
Same to you guys.
See you, Judd.
Judd Surratt, of course, along with Bob Beers, play-by-play here on the Bruins Radio Network. We will step aside here. We'll get to more of your calls coming up next. 617-779-0985 as we continue here on the season finale of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers. The home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers with you here on the final edition of the Hockey Show for this season. We'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up in about 15 minutes from now. In between now and then, your phone calls. We go to Kathy in New Hampshire up next. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. First time caller, long time listener. Just want to say I enjoyed the Bruins this season, thoroughly enjoyed them. And my question is, what was your analysis, or what is your analysis of the fourth line this year, how they played? I know they seemed exhausted towards the end of the season, but I just wanted your analysis overall of the fourth line. I'm going to hang up and let you answer.
I appreciate the call. As a group, I love those guys.
Yeah, there's a lot to like there.
As far as running out of gas, I know Noah Chari was one of the guys on the list of the walking wounded. Apparently was playing with a sports hernia for a good chunk of the season.
Yeah, that's, he's not the fastest guy to begin with. Yeah. So you put a sports hernia in front of it, it's, you know, and you know, he missed some time in the middle of the season. You know, he's just going to be a guy that's, he'll never be 100% healthy for, not many guys are, but just the way he plays extremely hard. He blocks shots. I mean, he broke his hand blocking a shot this year, one of his fingers. You know, he missed some time where you could tell he just could not get around the ice effectively enough. What happened, I think, in the playoffs anyhow, was Riley Nash had his difficulties. Sean Corrali moved up, and that, you know, that changed,
that
altered the identity of the fourth line anyhow. I know Tim Schallisch sat out a game. He was pretty effective most of the season. Very effective player, big body. You know, they can get there. You know, they want to make sure that, you know, they're, I mean, he was motivated. That line was good. They fed off of one another. They had a lot of energy. I think there's a lot to like there. And, you know, we've talked about it with some people. You know, do you change the identity just a little bit to put a little more skill on that line? Or do you keep it as a grinding, you know, they'll get their ugly goals type of thing? Although Tim Schallisch scored a couple beauties this year. You know, but typically the way that they're going to score is kind of the uglier type of goals, which is fine. You know, you need them in all different ways, and sometimes you need those greasy goals. But can you upgrade? I think that's the question. First of all, do any of those guys move up to a third line? People have asked if Sean Corrali's capable of that. I like him in the fourth line role. I really do. I think that third line role has to be a little bit more offensive than maybe what
you mentioned that earlier. That can be more of a scoring line than a grinder line.
But just the way he plays, I mean, you love the way that he plays. He brings the energy. He brings the physicality. He brings speed. He can check. He embraces his role. I think when you put him up on that third line, now he's still a young player, so maybe there's room to grow there. But you put him up on that third line, at least where he is right now, I think you're taking a step back, at least on what that line can give you offensively.
Well, and look, you've got Schaller's an unrestricted free agent, and Corrali is a restricted free agent. Achari still has one more year left on his deal. So, you know, again, there's kind of decisions to be made there about what you want that to look like going
back. I think he's an absolute for bringing back. You know how he got here, by the way, right?
What's that?
You know how he got to Boston, right? You know how he became a Bruin. He was part of the Milan Lucic trade.
Okay.
Eventually.
If you go back.
So Lucic went to L.A.
Yep.
For Martin Jones and Colin Miller. Martin Jones went to San Jose for Sean Corrali and a first-round pick.
Okay.
So within a couple of days, it was part of the Lucic deal. So Sean Corrali was part of that. Trent Frederick was the other part of that. He was the pick in the first round that they took with that pick, with San Jose's pick. But anyhow, Schaller had a good season. He might get a nice little offer somewhere. You know, we're all talking about Riley Nash. Schaller might get a nice little offer somewhere. And that's possible. And does he want to take, you know, the hometown discount to be here? He's a New Hampshire guy, right?
Yep.
So that's possible as well. Or is somebody ready to step into a fourth line role? And there are some candidates down in Providence that we haven't mentioned yet. You know, the Ryan Fitzgeralds of the world. We haven't mentioned a guy like Peter Stolarik. We haven't mentioned, you know, guys who are down there and playing that. There's a number of names down there. I know Austin Zarnik's name came up the other day with Donnie Sweeney. So, you know, he's more of a right winger or a centerman. But that's, you know, there are names down there that could maybe fill in on that. And when I say fill in, could play a role on that fourth line. But if you like what you've got there and you like the money and where it's at, then they had a good identity. And it was an identity for what this team was all about.
Let's go to John in Woburn. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning. Hey, John.
So, go ahead. One of the things that seemed to frustrate the Bruins dealing with speed on other teams, especially Toronto during the regular season and definitely in the playoffs. Going forward, how do you see that shaking out? And is it a personnel thing? Is it a system? Do they need to change how they play against those fast teams? Seems like in the playoffs, I don't think Toronto played the way they did all season. And then when they got the Tampa, you saw what happened with their inability to deal with speed.
I appreciate the call, John.
Well, that's always a part of it. That's the way that the NHL is trending right now anyhow, or has been trending here for the last few years, and more about the speed. And it's not just speed when you have the puck. It's speed when you don't have the puck. How do you get it back? How fast can you close on guys? How quickly can you get in on a forecheck to try to cause turnovers? Tampa did that extremely well. Toronto did it at times, but they were different teams. They were built kind of differently in the way that they are structured, Toronto mm-hmm. and Tampa, even though they both had speed. You know, so they played a little bit different. But, you know, so if you don't have the puck, how do you get it back? And that's a big part of how fast you play. You know, how quickly can a D close on a guy? How's your back pressure coming from the forwards, coming up through the back through the neutral zone after a forecheck's been broken? I mean, those are all areas that have to be looked at. And, you know, that's something that happens from year to year. You know, each year you try to evolve a little bit based on the personnel that you have and the way that you want to play based on that personnel. And do you make little changes here and there? Do you make major changes? I don't think major changes are coming. I'm talking about in the way you play, but there's probably some smaller stuff that they want to focus on that maybe they want to get better at, and I'm sure that is. And does that come from personnel or does it come from tweaks in the way that you play? And that's something that they have to, you know, sit down and really kind of pick apart here over the next few weeks as they're putting their heads together and trying to figure out, all right, you know, who do we want in our lineup and how sure. do we have to play?
Let's grab one more quick one here. Mike, you're up next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to do a quick shout-out to Bob, listening from afar on the NHL app in a kind of a hockey desert. It's great to be able to keep up with what was formerly the home team, and I really appreciate kind of a measured approach. You know, you hear, and God love him, Espo down in Tampa Bay or Screamers or whatever. I love that Bob really has a measured approach. It's clear he wants the Bruins to do well, but at the same time, you know, he's going to tell you when they come out flat, and he's going to tell you nuances of the game, cycles. I just learn a lot. It's great.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate the call, Mike, and appreciate you, checking in. He's from Texas.
Nice.
So keeping tabs on the bees down in Texas. All right, we will continue with one more half hour. We're going to talk with Billy Jaffe coming up after Sean Silver gives us Sports Hub headlines as we put a wrap on the Bruins season here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerah, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And joined now on the phone, as we have been throughout the season, right around this time most weeks, it's Billy Jaffe, who is off covering the continuing action in the NHL playoffs, including Tampa, Washington last night in Game 1. What's going on, Billy?
Good morning, Ryan. How are you, Beersy?
Morning, Billy.
How are you?
Boy, Washington jumped on Tampa last night right off the bat, huh?
Sure did. They came out focused. They came prepared. Tampa didn't, and that's an understatement. They had, what, two or three shots in the first period, 10 through two periods. Numerous opportunities that they thought they were going to create with speed or try to get speed going, and Washington really, you know, gapped up beautifully. I mean, the first period alone, I had four, five, six plays by Tampa, Washington defensemen on Tampa's forwards who never got going. I don't think they were ready to pay the price. There were a lot of people that were saying this was the same thing that happened against the Boston Bruins, and while the scores were similar, it was not the same thing. Tampa played pretty well in Game 1 against the Bruins, and you know, talked to John Cooper about it yesterday. He's like, we weren't awful. We were good against the Bruins. They were better. We didn't finish, but okay, we lost. They were bad last night. They were really bad last night, and Washington was great last night. They looked motivated and intense and very thorough in their Game 1.
So much is made about Washington and their previous postseason failures, and you know, obviously they advanced to the conference finals this year, and that's kind of a big story there. But do you feel like, you know, this might finally be the year, or you know, does Tampa figure this out and make, you know, and ultimately get back to the Stanley Cup final?
Well, no, I mean, I think that there's a good chance that, I mean, I had Tampa winning the series in a long series, but could Washington win? Sure. I mean, if Nick Backstrom comes back, and I've been reassured or assured that Nicholas Backstrom is going to play. He came in early yesterday with the first group of guys in the bus, still had his hand wrapped, his right hand is, but looks like two of his fingers wrapped. But I'm assured that he's going to play, and if he plays and he's as good as Nick Backstrom or pretty close to can be, he gives him another element of really, obviously, great hockey. This Washington team, they say it feels different. I talked to a bunch of the players yesterday, fellas. They talk about a calmness. They talk about an approach that is anything but uptight. You know, it's anything but thinking about the path. Yes, they had to beat Pittsburgh, and they're thrilled that they did. But there's a lot of players, they say, on this team that don't have the length of that you know, the lament the history of an Ovechkin, of a Backstrom. You know, they point to guys like a Dmitry Orlov, who was outstanding. He was phenomenal last night. And some of the younger guys, whether it's a Verana or Stevenson, et cetera, that are pushing the pace for them. And they feel that it's different. So, I mean, who am I to doubt them that they say it feels different? But look, they're having a good time here. In the players' lounge at their team hotel, they set up a Super Mario Kart tournament. They've got a big screen there where they're playing video games. They're having a good time. They're ready to go.
Well, Orlov had an outstanding game, except that reach that he had on Stamkos when he made him look silly there going to the net. I guess Stamkos has the ability to do that. But, no, he did look good. But so my question is for them and for Washington, I mean, Braden Holtby has been good since he's been put back in the playoffs. He did not start for Washington in the first couple of games of the playoffs. In fact, down the stretch, Grubauer was the guy. Holtby had all kinds of holes in his game. Is he back? What has changed for him, or what have they said has changed for him to put him back in the right frame of mind and play the way he has been?
They're saying that his, and this is pretty, I guess, hockey cliche, Beardsy, his focus is where it needs to be, and that they just accepted it as a bad stretch. Obviously, it didn't come at a good time near the end of the season, but what they also say is that the team is refocused. They had a team meeting with coaches and players about, I'm going to say, 15 or so, maybe 18 games left in the season, Beardsy, where they reassessed their team defense, and they changed things a little bit where they said, all right, we're skating hard, but we are not coming back smartly in our lanes. We're not blocking shots. But the Capitals, as somebody pointed out to me yesterday, think about this. When's the last time, really, a Capital forward, I'm talking one of their skill guys or whatever, has been out from blocking a shot? Because they really didn't do a lot of that. They started to do it now. And I think that's helped Holtby. But in general, his game, Beardsy, he got refreshed after not playing as much. I think he got refocused. I think he needed a little kick in the backside. That's my outside, you know, looking in perspective. I remember doing the game that they played at the outdoor game in Navy, and he played there and played pretty well. And then his next game, he didn't. He didn't play well again. They had to pull him. So he needed to refocus. He seems to have found that. I had a long talk with him yesterday. He's as mellow as could be. He kind of personifies this team and the calmness attitude that he said, look, they were down 0-2 to Columbus. And if we weren't calm, we don't come back in that series. And, you know, we had to be that way. And he says that's resonated through the room.
Billy, before we get to a few thoughts on the Bruins as they head into the offseason, out west, you've got the matchup that everybody predicted at the beginning of the season in Vegas and Winnipeg playing in the Western Conference Final. What do you expect out of that series and, you know, in two teams that nobody expected to be there?
Well, I don't know, but if people didn't expect Winnipeg to be there. I'm not going to say I had them, you know, go into the Cup. Vegas for sure. Winnipeg, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I think we all thought they were a team, definitely a team that would be in the playoffs and be on the rise this year.
Playoff team, yeah.
Oh, capable. Yeah. Capable, but they had underachieved here for the last couple of years, I thought, anyhow. But they put it together this year. There's no question. And the addition of Stastny helped them. They're a team that, I mean, we've seen it all year. They can beat you in all kinds of different ways. I mean, they're built to win in the playoffs. They're built for the long haul, not just the regular season. They're built to win in the playoffs with the D that they have and the ability to you know, just throw wave after wave of high-end talent at you.
Yeah, and you bring up the name Paul Stastny, and he has been – you can't call a $7 million guy an underrated trade acquisition, but I don't know if a lot of us – I can't say that I saw that coming – from St. Louis to Winnipeg, and when that happened, I'm like, whoa, that was a good move by Kevin Cheveldayoff. Better than a good move. That was a great move. That solidified their depth up front. Their right side D, led by Dustin Byfuglien, and then Trouba.
How good's he been?
Myers. Oh, my God. All three of them. Their right side D dominated the Nashville Predators when it was all said and done. And, you know, they were supposed to have the top D crew in the league. And then how about the kid, Hellebuck, you know, from Lowell? Played college hockey at UMass Lowell. You want to talk about a guy going back to that calm term, that focus term. He's everything, like, you know, using that. I mean, he's been great. So they're a team to me. I mean, I have to have them favored. I do have them favored going into the series. But then again, I've picked against Vegas all year long, so what the hell do I know? Vegas' speed through
the
lineup.
You're not alone.
Yeah, thankfully. Yeah, it makes me feel a little better. But, Beardsy, wouldn't you say Vegas is top to bottom speed, straight line speed, is probably, I don't know if it's better than Winnipeg's. It's equal, if not better. But I think the talent of Winnipeg through their top four lines is probably better. That it is better than the top lines of the Vegas Golden Knights, who worked their butts off. But I don't know if they have the most skill throughout the lineup.
No, but they've got the four lines, and you could tell that it was a major factor for them how they wanted to construct their team and how they wanted it to be made up. They knew that they had to be deep. They knew that they had to have speed coming from every area in order to be, among many other things, in order to be successful. And they built their team a lot surrounding that and how they thought that they had to play in order to win hockey games. And it's, nobody's had them here. Nobody had them here. Nobody had them, making the playoffs for.
I know. I agree. I don't think there's a better team in the league at back-checking. That back-checks harder, better, smarter than the Vegas Golden Knights. And I think because of that, they've helped their D crew out, which I don't think is great. I think it's good.
It's okay. But they play with a chip on their shoulder, Billy. They're all the cast-offs. They're all the misfits, right? They're the guys that teams felt that were expendable, and I don't think that you can underestimate that because they're reminded of it everywhere they go, and they just continue to defy the odds and win, maybe with some of that attitude and chip on the shoulder the way that they play.
Yeah, no question about it. And by the way, their goalie, you could argue Fleury is the MVP so far of the playoffs, Conn Smythe. He's been simply amazing.
Billy Jaffe joining us from out on the road where he is covering the Tampa Washington series for NHL Network, of course. But want to get some thoughts on the Bruins season as a whole and the off season. We went pretty in depth on it on the podcast this past week on the Extra Ice Time podcast. Subscribe now if you haven't already, because we hopefully will be popping in a couple of times during the off season as well. But coming out of that series, now that you've had about a week to kind of digest it and look forward, how do you feel about the way that this postseason went for the Bruins and the outlook of this team moving forward into the offseason?
With regard to feeling about the postseason, I feel okay about it. I feel great about the season. I don't feel like, oh my God, it was the best season. I feel like, okay, there was so much growth and everything, but the postseason, a bit disappointed in certain things. And you go back to that Toronto series being up 3-1. I get closing out is tough, but then to go with this to game seven was a little, in hindsight, you say, that's a little unnecessary, I guess. But, it's part of that youth and some learning and some ability to finish things off that has to be, has to be addressed. The next series, I'm sure you guys have spoken about it, that they got beat by the better team, no question about it. Not to get into the whole officiating thing, coulda, shoulda, woulda, but on the whole, I would say that we saw some things come playoff time, still more team speed needed, still some better depth needed, pretty obvious, and I know, because we talked off the air, and I'm sure Bobby's already talked about it, defensively, the depth needs to be addressed. I mean, it just has to be. I mean, it's better. We saw some great things this year. The introduction of certain players, the DeBrusques, the Heinens, for the, I'd say 80%, and that's not 85% of Danton's play, the Matt Grizzlies, et cetera. I don't want to be repetitive of what you guys said, but we saw a lot of goodness. We did. We saw a heck of a lot. But the reality is that it was good. It wasn't overall great when it was said and done.
How do you think ultimately Don Sweeney is going to get to address that, particularly as we've talked about during the course of the show today, the need at left defense going forward here? How do you think he's going to be able to address that?
My initial thought all has to be via trade. I don't have the free agent market list in front of me just yet. I'm not there. I got about another 10 days or so until it's in front of me, but I don't see that happening in free agency. I see him having to get creative in a trade, maybe one of these three-team trades that we seem to be, I don't know, Beers, you agree, we're seeing a little bit more of now. Guys are getting a little more creative around working with teams.
We've definitely seen it. It started earlier this year with the Duchesne trade.
Exactly, and I think we're going to have to, they had to move pieces to do the Rick Nash trade.
And, you know, I still think, I do think Donnie is very willing. I know there was comments made at his season-ender presser, I believe it was Thursday, you know, that he's going to explore getting back into the first round, and I think he will, and I think he'll explore moving in a young asset for, and you know, an established one, or a little more established one. I think that when it's all said and done, they continue to develop great depth in the lineup throughout the organization. And, you know, you always get a little angst when you have to give up something, this unknown. And we've said it many times on this show, guys, that sometimes prospects are at their greatest heights or greatest value when they're still prospects. But, you know, you give up these guys that are going to be, everybody says, oh, they're surefire NHLers, and you give them up, and you're like, well, but wait a second, we needed to address this. And that's where I see the Bruins having to do that if they want to get one of these top three, top four guys for sure.
You know, one of those guys that we talked about on the podcast this past week that, you know, could potentially be on the move, or, you know, trying to see where he fits going forward, is not a prospect. It's a guy who's been here for a long time. It's Adam McQuaid. You know, what do you feel like might be the future of McQuaid? Is he a guy that we might see get moved as part of a deal like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he could. Contractually speaking, what, do you have 1 year left?
1 year left, yeah.
2.675, something like that, 2.75.
Yep.
And, you know, that's not hard for teams to take in. Everybody around the league respects the character of Adam McQuaid. I tell you, Adam McQuaid was pretty darn good on the penalty kill, though, again, for the Bruins in the playoffs. And so I get that. You know, I guess I get that fan angst still when I say, well, I understand why he may have to move on, but he's pretty good. But, you know, if you get Carlo back healthy, obviously that's the biggest hope. You have McAvoy, and assuming Kevin Miller right there, you've got your three rights. Of course you need depth, but if you can find a way maybe to save some money and open it up for another opportunity, you may have to do it. I mean, Adam is just he's a true Bruin. He's a true professional. But, yes, I could see it. And look, Derek Englund is a great comparison to Adam McQuaid. When he was the last pair guy in Calgary, a lot of people said, you know, he just doesn't have it. He doesn't have it. Well, he goes to Vegas, and he's a leader, and he's a physical presence, and for obvious reasons he went there too. He's from there or lives there now. But it just worked out for him. And you know, I could see another team saying, we need the grit, we need the character, we need the leadership, we need the presence of an Adam McQuaid, both on and off the ice. And, yeah, I could see him being something that other teams would look at. I love the guy. I'd hate to see him go, but it's a business.
We'll leave you on that. We appreciate the time. We'll be watching for you on NHL Network during the postseason here.
Guys, a lot of fun as always this year. Have a wonderful summer. Hope to see you guys. RJ, thanks for everything. Bearsy, hope to see you in the offseason.
You got it.
All right. Billy Jaffe joining us again. You can check him out on NHL Network covering that Tampa-Washington series. And that's going to about do it for us. So, again, I started the show by saying it. I'll end the show by saying it again, Bearsy. It's tough to feel, you know, bad about the direction of this organization.
No,
things are pointing in the right direction.
Encouraged, right? But now the bar is set a little higher. I don't think we were sitting here last year saying that they were going to make it or players have as many points as they did, look as good as they did during the regular season. You know, you wanted to improve on last year. They certainly did it in the regular season. They did it in the playoffs. They made it to the second round and then eventually losing to the top team in the East. So, yeah, that was improvement there. And you look for continued improvement. You don't want to take that step back. Now you've put yourself back in a position to win again. And now the expectations are a lot different going into next year.
It's going to be an interesting offseason, and there's going to be a lot of interesting battles at camp next year for some of the few spots that are in question.
As there were this year, exactly. Yeah. And those core guys need to continue to incorporate some of those younger guys into their lineup, and they'll be learning, they'll be different things along the season that come up where they have to continue to kind of break through. You know, Jake DeBrusk was a healthy scratch this year. Danton Heinen was a healthy scratch this year. Carlo was a healthy scratch this year. You got to continue to work with those young guys and continue to get them moving along.
Well, we appreciate you being here with us week to week.
Thanks.
And we will be back, I'm sure, come late September, early October next year.
Look forward
for
to
the
it.
Hockey show. I will be back a lot
from
earlier
China,
than that.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's
They're
true.
Do a show from China.
I'm willing.
They're playing against Calgary, two preseason games in September next year.
Willing to dust off the passport if we want to go over and I'm not sure what the time difference there would be, but we'll figure it out. That's going to do it for another season of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Thanks to all of you who have joined us every Saturday morning throughout the course of the season. And I will be back tomorrow at noon with Mike Flynn prior to the Celtics game. We'll talk to you then.